62.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Charlotte Line. We are so glad to be with you tonight. And on behalf of the Charlotte Line, this is Dr. John. We want to give our thoughts and prayers to Ryan Newman and his family. I mean, his contribution to racing cannot be matched. And we hope he will get well and he'll be able to compete in the most fabulous sport of all time. All I've got to say is we can't thank him enough for everything he's done. And we're so sorry that he was in this wreck. But you know what? We love you, man. Brady, what do you have to say?
Just that I hope he has a speedy recovery. Just glad to hear that he's at the very least awake and alert and talking with family and friends at this moment. We're still waiting on official word from NASCAR about his current condition, but the updates that we have had are at least positive, encouraging, and just thankful that we avoided the worst and that he's doing okay and as well as he can be considering all things that happened last night.
Well, thank you very much, and we appreciate that. Zach, what have you got to say?
I'm right there with you guys. You know, it's a sad circumstance. Ryan is a fantastic racer, you know, and not just that, a fantastic father and a fantastic guy for charity. He does a lot of stuff with animal rescues. He's a great guy. I know this is just going to be a bump in the road for him. Not only do I hope to see him back in the car, I hope to see him back in victory lane sometime soon.
He's going to be in victory lane. I know he is. So that's Dr.
Yeah.
John. He's going to be in victory lane very soon. And we thank and appreciate everything about Ryan Newman. So, Ryan, get better. Damn it, we love you. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
I know. That's just the way I say things. Damn it, we love you, Ryan, and get better soon. You're gonna be there. So anyway, welcome to the Charlotte Line, and of course, I want to say hello to Brady. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty okay. It was my first day back at work after my 5-day staycation, and it was, all things considered, not too bad. Wasn't super overwhelmed with paperwork and got my stuff all caught up. So, riding a pretty good high tonight, so really doing okay on this Tuesday.
Well, we are so glad you're here with us tonight. Zach, what's up? Zach Beasley, what's up?
You know, just hanging out. I don't know, this weekend. This weekend was fantastic. We had some great racing. Oh, helmet just about fell on my head. Isn't that ironic? There's some great racing, and I can't wait to talk about it.
All right, let's talk. Excited. 1, 2, 3, talk.
Well, I think the first thing we need to talk about isn't the Daytona 500, because that was a 2-day event that was a craziness. We also had the Xfinity race where we had a first-time winner, and then we had the Truck Series race where we had a continuous, you know, guy in the sport, Grant Enfinger, get his win, but we had a young man just about get his first ever win. And we also had the two dual races where we saw people battling out to try to get a better starting spot and to even start the race. Brady, where do we even start? I think we start on Thursday, right?
Well, you got to start on Thursday. Got to go chronological order, which brings us to the dual qualifying races. And honestly, they weren't at all what I was expecting. I thought with the clash that we saw last Sunday with all the wreckage and all the carnage, I thought the dual races would be very calm, very orderly. Drivers just trying to save their equipment, trying to get to the end. But that was not at all what we saw. We saw two wide racing in both duels, saw a bunch of, you know, pretty intense moments, and saw some pretty devastating losses, too. Very, very hard, crushing blows of drivers that got wrecked out that were in pretty good contention for possibly qualifying into the race that had to go home. Most notably, Daniel Suarez. We talked about extensively on last week's show that it was going to be really, really a tough circumstance for him to try and make the race because he was not really had the best record when it comes to plate racing. And unfortunately, an untimed move by Ford's coming to pit road, Ryan Blaney not seeing the 96 to his inside, accidentally clipped Daniel, sent him for a spin, and put him right in the wall, and absolutely just took him out of the race and quashed his hopes at the 500, which was just devastating. You could see in his face he was angry, he was frustrated, he was upset, he was sad. It was just was one of the more visceral moments of the weekend, just the absolute agony. You could see the pain of knowing that he was not going to race in the sport's biggest event, which to me just really hammered home just the gravitas that is the Daytona 500. You know, just how much it means to these drivers, the historic significance. You could just see it in Daniel's face, knowing that he wasn't going to be a part of the festivities this year, and that crushed me. But that's racing. That's what you have to deal with. But definitely not what we were wanting for Daniel Suarez. But the rest of the duel that he was in, fantastic. Joey Logano holding on for the race win in duel one. And then William Byron getting the win in race number two. Talk about that for us a little bit, Zach.
See, these duels, like you said, they were a little more tame than I thought they were going to be. You know, like you said, the class.
Oh, you're the opposite.
Then again, and here's why I say that. I think they're a little more tamed, and the reason is that these cars that they had to run during the duels are because they have to use these cars during the 500. So they have to kind of baby them. They can't really do too much damage because you don't really want to go to a backup car. Yes, you do get the opportunity to practice set backup car during two more practice sessions, but you lose your starting position. So if you win the dual race, there's no point in you even, you know, bringing out the backup car. So I thought they were a little tamed. Yes, there were some hectic moments. There was some good racing, though. I'm not saying it was bad. They didn't wreck enough, which means they didn't have a good race. Quite the opposite. It was still a fantastic race. Two wide, even three wide. You know, we did see Daniel Suarez get wrecked out with Ryan Blaney, who did have to go to a backup car with that incident. Very heart-wrenching, very hard for him. But then on the other spectrum, we had a first-time winner. You know, it's not a point for – well, it was a point race because William Byron won the second duel and cementing, him getting a great starting position, but getting his first win as not a rookie anymore. This is his third year in racing full-time for Rick Hendrick and Hendrick Motorsports and the number iconic 24 car because I've always been a big Gordon fan. That was a great race. There were some sketchy moments, as usual, but the go-or-go-homer for that race, J.J. Yaley, Timmy Hill, had to battle it out. And at one point, you really thought, oh, Timmy's not going to make it because J.J. was running so good. But then on lap 41, he had an accident where he got put into the wall, which happened, and that ended J.J.'s hope of actually starting the race. But the feel-good story of that one was Timmy Hill and his MBM Motorsports team being able to start the Daytona 500. And Timmy himself even said, yeah, if we didn't make the race, we would have to close the team down because they put all their money into this race. Now, just starting the Daytona 500, you get the last place, no matter what, is $125,000, which is, you know, the top teams doesn't seem like a lot, but to that small team, the Timmy Hill, number 66, That was going to be a huge payday. He still had a decent finish, got some more money, and he actually landed a sponsor for the Vegas race. Manscaped hopped on because of how well he was doing, which is always a feel-good story when you can get a sponsor for a race that you haven't even started yet or started even looking for an opportunity. I really enjoyed both races, and I felt that William Byron winning this race not only gets some points for the playoffs if he makes it, but also kind of gets that monkey off his back, like, okay, I finally got a win. It's not a points win. It's not a race win, but it's still a win. That proves that I can still do this.
Definitely a confidence booster.
It's a total important win for William Byron. It really is, and we're proud of him.
Correct. I definitely am. He's a young gun that – both me, Brady, and our good friend Greg have seen actually come up the ranks in K&N, Trucks, and Xfinity at our favorite home track, the Iowa Speedway. my favorite race of all time, my favorite track of all time. I do feel, though, that this pre-race, I should say, before the Daytona 500, before all the points races really started, it was good. It was a good feeler of what we might see. We didn't see that, which is a lot of easy-going racing. We saw a lot of action-packed racing for the rest of the week from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we saw a lot of young guns doing really well. And, I mean, just looking at the dual races themselves, some of the young guns really didn't get – you know, Ross Chastain finishing ninth in his dual race, Tyler Reddick finishing 10th, and Ty Dillon finishing 11th. Those are three young guys who don't necessarily have the best equipment at all times. Tyler Reddick ran a very partial schedule, only two races for Richard Childress Racing's third car, the 31 last year. But those three had a really good, solid finish. And even Cole Custer making his first ever super speedway start in a cup car, finishing fifth in his dual race, which put him in the top 12 to start the race. And even, you know, going to the other dual race where Joey Logano won, we had a lot of, by the way, Ford dominated that race with the first four being Fords from Joey Logano, Eric Almirola, Ryan Newman, Brian, and Brad Keselowski. Brian is Brad's cousin. But even Bubba Wallace coming back with a strong finish of fifth in that dual race. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in his first real race with his new team in the 47, finishing eighth. Christopher Bell, the great story of him coming up, finally getting his first start. He finished ninth, and that doesn't sound impressive when there's only 20 cars, but that's the thing. Even with 20 cars, a young rookie like him getting up there to run to get a better spot in the Daytona 500 is crazy. And even John Hunter Nemechek making his first super speedway start in a cup car, finishing 12th for that. And then you had Justin Haley, you know, in 17th, who did win a cup race, the Firecracker 400, but it's not that anymore. But I love these races, and it did give us a taste of what we were going to see coming up.
Oh, yeah, no, it was definitely a good way to set the tone for the race weekend. It was perfect action, not a lot of crashes. You know, you didn't have a lot of drivers tearing up their equipment, so you didn't have a lot of drivers going to backup, so you knew the cars that were going to be entering Sunday's race were still going to be the pristine, you know, well-shaped bullets cars, the ones the teams wanted to bring down, so that was also really nice, but just a really good way to get Speedway started off for the weekend, which leads us into Friday night's race, the Truck Series, and what a nail-biter that race was coming down to it.
Oh, my.
The Truck Series, honestly, is my favorite race every year. I said it last week. I love the way those trucks are, and you could see it Friday night. They were just literally on the edge of control the entire way because those trucks, they get so light in the back with that bed, and they're just dancing all over the racing surface, and they're just really struggling for that grip. And then those truckers have the audacity to lay their bumpers on the back of one another and start pushing. And we saw some really hectic pushes. I saw on Twitter, Ben Rhodes and Todd Gilliland were giving each other grief about how hard they were pushing each other, all in good fun, you know, just completely insane racing. And even with all of that, we saw a few wrecks, we saw some, you know, tight, close racing, and it came down to 0.010 seconds, 1/100th of a second for the win, and it was none other than Grant Enfinger, your regular season point leader at the end of the regular season last year. Grant Enfinger did, and the number 98, he held off a hard-charging Jordan Anderson, the number 3, an independent in the Truck Series, for the win. What was significant about the number 98 taking this win, he drives for Thor Sport Racing, which has been a staple in the Truck Series for now 25 years. They're celebrating their 25th season, and it's just incredible just how much Duke and Ronda Thorson have given back to this series. They've not really moved their operation up into the other echelons. They've been primarily a Truck Series-focused team, and it's just incredible to watch how much they've grown with the Truck Series since 1995 and really kind of evolved as a program. So just absolutely fantastic that two wonderful people that have given so much to the sport could be rewarded on NASCAR's biggest stage, watching that beautifully painted, gotta say, silver, yellow, and black trim 98 go into victory lane. Just, I don't know about you, Zach, but that really made my heart warm.
Dude, and you know how much of a trucker fan I am. I've been a fan of the Truck Series for so many years that I truly feel that the race, the Daytona race, is always spectacular. Always. It doesn't matter if you're a consistent Truck Series fan. It doesn't matter. If you only watch that one race, you know it's going to be a good race. And like you said, those Thor trucks were beautiful, doing a great anniversary paint scheme, a silver paint scheme, to show off 25 years of hard work and dedication that Thor Sports put into this sport, giving us champions, like Matt Crafton, giving us some, you know, Johnny Sauter's, giving us a lot of great drivers that have become champions and a lot of great wins over the years. And like you said, that just shows how hard they've worked. They, you know, Grant Amsinger is someone that has worked really hard with this team to get to the point series champion for the regular season, I might add, for the regular season, and to be that hard guy to race. You know, and Jordan Anderson is one of these guys that we have to talk about because he's a young guy who just wants the race. He's even said in his interview, by the way, if you have not seen that interview, go find it. That the energy that guy gives off, it's like he won the race. And he basically did. He got second, the best finish he's ever had in any race. He's someone that truly shows that an independent can still, if you work your butt off and you are on the grind, you can make it in this sport. Those two battling out to get the win when there was some spins on the backstretch. I mean, it just was a fantastic race. I was on the edge of my seat. I was at work having to watch the race, and I'm just glued to my monitor going back and forth. And when I say that, I was so happy to see the end of that race, but to see that Jordan Anderson didn't win, I kind of sunk my heart. I was like, oh, Jordan. But he still was celebrating as if he got the win. He was still, you know, thanking his sponsors as if he got it. And that was just crazy. And by the way, he's not just the only underdog story. If you look at the top five, there's drivers out there that have never even seen the top 15, even the top 10. You have Cody Roebuck, who's a young guy who just wants to go fast. He brought his number 9 Chevy into third. Derek Cross, a team, the number 19 team, which wasn't a full-time team. This is their first time going out full-time with Bill Marcus. Nope, that's not it. Brady?
Bill McAnally, Heigelman Racing.
Thank you. They're going on their first full season, and they come out with a fourth. I mean, that's just unheard of. And you got Natalie Decker going from DGR Crosley to Nice Motorsports for a very partial schedule, getting a fifth. And then you have last year's winner, Austin Hill, getting a solid sixth. Johnny Sauter, Ross Chastain, even getting an eighth. The young man who's been working hard with it. Sheldon Creed, again, another Chevy driver, getting a ninth. And then Jason White. And Josh Rayun's truck, the number 33, getting a 10th. And that, by the way, Josh Rayun's team doesn't always get these great finishes. They've had a handful of them, and their best one ever was at Eldora, the dirt track. But then you had a lot of, you know, season regulars like Zane Smith, who will now be running full-time in the trucks for GMS Racing, getting the 11th. Riley Herbst making a very select start in the 51 truck, who was the pole winner, by the way, getting a 12th. Brett Moffitt, my favorite truck series driver, well, the main one, I should say, getting a 13th. Not a best run for him. But then you have Corey Roper in the 04 truck. Again, he's another young guy. He just wants to go fast. Texas-based team drove all the way to Florida to race, and he got a 14th. Not bad for a car for a truck that kind of got beat up right there at the end. Then you had Matt Crafton, Todd Gillen, Brendan Poole making a very early start for himself in the number 30 truck, getting a 17th. Corbin Forrester getting his 18th. Spencer Boyd, who won Talladega, who at the end of the race, you know, he was running, but the truck kind of caught on fire. Then you had Rafael Lazard getting his first super speedway start, only getting a 20th, but not bad for someone that kind of got wrecked. You got Stuart Friedman, who in the offseason had to change from Chevy to Toyota, getting a 21st. Kristen Eckington, last year's ARCA Series winner, unfortunately not getting the result he wanted of a 22nd. Tanner Gray, same thing, getting a 23rd. Jesse Little getting involved in another accident. A lot of these guys from now on just had bad accidents. You know, Ben Rhodes getting a 25th finish, Gus Steen, Tyler Aiken, Angela Rutsch, Brandon Dutz in the 28th FYND fire truck, which is always a great truck to see. It's an all-volunteer crew that makes that. It's from New York. They are some great guys. Tant Fogelman, who was a late entry in the O2, to Austin Wayne self, and Ty Majeski, who had, I think, the craziest wreck in the truck series race. Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah, no, that was one of the nastiest slide we had seen up until Sunday. Just sparks flashing everywhere. I almost thought the car was on fire with how many sparks were flashing off that number 45 Chevrolet.
Glad that he walked away okay from that. Glad the safety was there. And really, honestly, I'm surprised the roof held up on that just because the pavement about ground the roof of that 45 Chevrolet clean off.
That was a very crazy race for him. So if he didn't catch it, coming out of the tri-oval, he gets spun, he hits, and you think, oh, he's just going to keep spinning. But instead, the truck gets airlift, gets some air underneath it, and he flips on his roof. And at that point, you think, oh, he's going to keep flipping. Nope, that truck slid all the way into turn one, just about into turn two. And the moment that it hit the flat part, I thought, okay, now it's going to – nope, it stayed on its roof. I was surprised by that. It is very lucky to see Ty Majeski, who's going for a full season for Nice Motorsports. Glad to see him get out of that. You know, luckily he is okay. It was a rough start to him, but he didn't let that hold him back. He still went late model racing down there in Florida, getting two or three wins in some very big races. So that's not going to hold him back being on his roof for about 25 minutes.
Exactly. No, we're really glad to see that he walked away okay. But, you know, just looking through this, that's what's really special about the Truck Series. You mentioned earlier just so many numerous stories. The Natalie Decker finish, that fifth place, that was the highest ever finish by a female driver in the Truck Series. So not only did we get really good stories, we got to see a little bit of history that night. Also, it was the 100th win in the Truck Series for Ford F-150, so another little bit of history we got to see that night. And Grant Enfinger, not only did he win, it's also snapped a 28-race winless streak dating all the way back to the 2018 season, because he did not pick up a win last year in 2019. So also really significant for that. For that team, that even though they had a really great season, you know, won the regular season point battle, had consistent runs, they were shut out of victory lane. So this, you know, already gets their season off to a great start, and hopefully they haven't lost any of that speed from last year. Maybe we'll see them get a few more wins before we knock it out. But before we move on from the Truck Series to the Xfinity Series, we saw some issues in qualifying, and we're going to talk about that here in just a minute with the Xfinity Series. But before the Truck Series, we saw a couple of pretty big names that I thought would be factoring into the race later on, miss the show. We saw both drivers for Nemco Motorsports, John Hunter Nemechek and Joe Nemechek, both failing to qualify. The thing I feel like we got to look at is the fact that these two, they've ran this entire operation up to this point with Chevrolet. They've been running Silverados up to this point. They've had RCR technology underneath those trucks. And that's what they've kind of got used to working with. However, with John Hunter Nemechek now driving for Front Row Motorsports and Front Row kind of, you know, fostering a development program and, you know, dipping their toes a little bit into the Truck Series, they've now partnered with the Nemco Motorsports team, and Nemco has switched from their iconic Chevrolets to Fords. And, Zach, is there any rumblings around the garage there that maybe there might have been some issues technologically with getting those trucks switched over and getting them prepared for the season that led to them missing the race when a lot of people had them arguably as some of the favorites?
No, and honestly, it's one of these things, too, where I think, you know, I haven't heard much about it, but the biggest thing that I take away from them not making a race isn't the fact that they were – you know, the switch, I feel like the switch might help them in the long run, but right now it might have just been one of those things of like, crap, we didn't get these things set up right. You know, with the Ford body and everything, it is a different aerodynamic, and it does affect it, you know, body to body. You could have one setup that works amazing on Ford and works crappy on Chevy and vice versa. So I think it might just be something that they might have ran into it a little too early, or they went in head first, hey, we're going to do this, and then it's like, oh, wait, this doesn't work. Oh, this doesn't work. It's not they didn't have speed, but and one other thing, too, is they didn't really have that many points behind both the trucks. They qualified technically in the top 32, but they didn't make it in on time, unlike the NASCAR Cup Series where there's a charter system with the VM points and this and that. Let's just put it this way. It is interesting they didn't make it. I'm sad they didn't make it, but I feel like this might be a stepping stone for maybe them seeing, okay, we need to really focus on this and work harder on it. I think the biggest thing that they'll take away is that, okay, what did we mess up and how can we improve that to when we go to Talladega later this year in the fall? Because they have a lot of time now and they have a lot of resources, too, to talk to teams to be able to see what they did wrong. And also, you know, like I said, Daytona is a big race that we see a lot of one-off teams or teams that do very limited schedules come in to race. So I feel like they might have got a little bit overwhelmed and didn't get the speed they thought they needed in order to make the race as well.
Exactly. So I just wanted to highlight that real quick before we left the truck series and moved on to Saturday, because it kind of leads into another story we saw very similar to the Nemco boys missing the race. Saturday morning, we got things started off with qualifying for Saturday's Xfinity NASCAR Experience 300, and two big names missed that show. The Colic Racing team came down with three cars for Daytona. They're running two full-time teams, the number 10 for Ross Chastain and the number 11 for Justin Haley. And they entered a number 16 Chevrolet for A.J. Allmendinger for this race and seven other events scheduled later on this season. And after their performance in Daytona in July, many people were circling the Colic Racing teams as being the favorites, being the guys to beat, being the drivers that everyone had to go through on Saturday to take that Xfinity Series win. But that wasn't the case. We saw in qualifying, the number 10 and the number 16 Chevrolets both have hub failures, which was super critical because both those teams did not run the full season last year and were not high enough in points to be guaranteed a starting position based off of their points finish from last season. And with their hub failures in qualifying, their cars were not also fast enough on the speed charts to get them in on time. So unfortunately, right off the gate, two really big starts, two of the favorites, gone right there, cut from the Xfinity Series field. A deal was brokered between Colic Racing and Ryan Sieg Racing, which fields number 38, 39, and 93, respectively, to put Ross Chastain and their sponsor Nutrien Ag Solutions on the number 38. Jeff Green, past champion in the Xfinity Series, will be running a few races this year, but mostly doing crew chief duties for Ryan Sieg Racing, was gracious enough to step aside and, for the betterment of that team, bring in some sponsorship dollars to that family-owned operation and put Ross Chastain in behind the wheel. But, I mean, Zach, what can you think of a more dramatic way to kick off a racing Saturday than two of your leading favorites not even qualifying for the race on a fluke part failure?
That is something that you cannot – like, if you were to look at that, that would be a story. Like, that's something from a movie. That's the beginning of a movie. And this is how, like, Ross is going to come back and win the championship this year. You know, this it truly is crazy. Again, the qualifying is not based on ownership and points. It is based on speed and points, unlike the charter system and the Cup Series. And there was only four teams that were go-homers and – there are four cars that weren't going to make it that were go-homers of about half the field or about half the size of the trucks. And it is interesting because they didn't have this issue, you know, all weekend. They didn't. They practiced, never had an issue. Went out and practiced again, never had the issue. And then AJ and Ross go out there, and it's like, whoa, what's going on here? And then they saw the third car, Justin Haley, to still qualify. And that was something that Chris Rice, who is the president of operations, even said himself, he's like, yeah, we're worried. We think we got it fixed, but we're still hopeful. And there was some, you know, hopes and glimmers that maybe Ross can make it in because the 10 did run significantly more races than the 16. That if maybe, you know, someone else had a parts failure or something else happened, that he'd be able to make it, but that didn't happen. So it is an interesting way and a really dramatic way, not just to start your race, but to start your season. This isn't like six or seven races in. This is day one, you know, race number one. It's like, oh, boy, okay, well, how can we fix this? Like you said, the Ryan Sieg Racing, Jeff Green gave up his spot in his car. NASCAR approved it. Even if you watch the qualifying, you could see Jeff make the announcement. And Ross Chastain didn't even know. He was just sitting down next to his hauler, just like, oh, man, I don't know what I'm going to do, blah, blah, blah. And then the interview cuts to him, and it's just like, you know, hey, you know, Jeff Green's giving up his seat for you. And he's just like, what? This is the first time I'm hearing about it. It's a great thing to see in sports because Jeff is one of those people, you know, he's a past champion. He even said himself, I'd rather give this up for someone that is wanting to get that championship. And I feel like if it was any other driver out there, you know, trying to make it into the race, Jeff wouldn't have done it. But to see the passion, to see the hard work that Ross has put in over the years, I definitely, you know, let him open up his ears. Like, okay, let me hear you out. Let me see what can we do. And he still got a fantastic finish. You know, it wasn't the best finish or the best outcome that they were hoping for, but still, Ross finished 22nd. You know, running on the lead on 15 lap or on lap 115, I should say. out of the 120. So only five laps down from an accident, but he was still running towards the end. It's still a good run, and it's still a good race for him. Just a bad circumstance to start your season, but maybe that's the bad juju getting off his back now instead of later on.
Oh, yeah, definitely rather get the bad luck out of the way early in the season and have all the good luck saved up for later in the season. But like you said, I think another thing that also boded well in the Jeff Green, Ross Chastain situation is, unlike a lot of the younger talent that's come through, Ross Chastain is one of those drivers. He is just like a Ryan Sieg or a Jesse Little or a driver for JD Motorsports. You know, he didn't buy his way into a ride. He cut his teeth, earning every step of the way, getting what sponsor dollars together he could, but just flat out learning, taking care of equipment, and proving it by starting and parking, running in the back of the pack, running in the mid pack. And so that also probably had to pay in his favor, because he wasn't just some rich kid who didn't make the field. He's one of them, you know, who just had another bad luck situation that's, you know, trying to set his career back. So from a fellow racer, I could definitely see Jeff Green being the kind of guy that he is, recognizing that and just wanting to help a fellow racer out. And like I said, he's already kind of easily stepping into that mentor role by doing some crew chiefing for that team throughout the season. He's been heavily involved with their driver development program, mentoring all the young talent that comes through those doors. So a really good operation there, and just another and the plethora of reasons why we love NASCAR and always refer to it as the family sport that it is. But and it was a dramatic way to start the day.
Talk about the race. Yes, this race was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah, we started with a dramatic day in qualifying, and the dramatics didn't start there. We got with the green flag going, had side-by-side racing for most of the event, and then of all things, the first caution comes out when the 51 of Jeremy Clements' car, I mean, essentially, for lack of a better term, just kind of falls apart. Due to some excessive bump drafting, it looked like had kind of dislodged some of the bracketing in the front nose piece of the car. And with the high speeds, the wind just buffets those bodies of those cars so much with so much force. And the extreme buffeting by the wind eventually broke that nose loose, which then forced the hood pins to come popping off that car, which got that wind underneath that hood, and it sent that hood flying clean off that 51. And when it came loose, it also dislodged some of the aero pieces in the hood section of the car, the actual roof part of the car, including a driver safety exit hatch that's there for safety, completely took that door hatch clean off the roof. So Jeremy Clements was running around with pieces just literally missing off that 51. They eventually got that car pieced back together, only to get swept up into a wreck later in the event by Justin Allgaier. Saw several wrecks throughout the event. It was definitely a very different feel from last year's race, when we saw a lot of single-file racing, not a lot of passing. Not the case this year. The drivers were on it. There was really no real break in the action that I can recall. Just good, intense racing. Came down to the wire. We thought the race was going to come down with about 4 to 5 laps to go between some heavy favorites. Jeb Burton in there, Austin Cindric, some bad blocking between those two. Ended up taking those out with a few other favorites from the race, setting up a green-white checkered finish where we saw several young drivers, Harrison Burton in there, running his first Daytona race for the Xfinity Series, running in his rookie campaign. Drivers like all these other drivers are trying to factor the way in, but we end up seeing a first-time winner in Noah Gregson, who's competing in his second season for Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s Junior Motorsports, running the number 9 Chevrolet. He is winning his first race, and a lot of people weren't really sure of him coming back to that team, even though he had a pretty decent season, all things considered, in his rookie campaign for Junior Motorsports. He didn't go to victory lane, and so a lot of people were kind of question whether or not he'd come back to that Chevrolet. Sponsorship was also kind of questionable, but Junior Motorsports believes in his talent. They believe in what he can do behind the wheel. So they were able to really work hard. They put together a sponsorship package between Bass Pro Shops and got him in the race, and it paid off. This was actually also Earnhardt's organization's 7th win at Daytona and 5th in the season opener race in February, which is the most all-time by a team at any one track in the Xfinity Series. So another bit of history made there. It just shows that, just like his father, Dale Earnhardt Jr. pays special attention to these restrictor plate tracks. He has a lot of love and compassion for Talladega and Daytona, and it shows in his emphasis for how his organization excels at these bigger tracks where the speeds are always higher and the doors and the fenders are a little bit closer. So
Just really a good way for that team to start off. And also for that crew chief, Dave Ellens, this is the fourth time that, at Daytona that he's won with a fourth different driver for Junior Motorsports. So that also shows that not only can Noah Gregson wheel a car, he had a really smart crew chief turning the wrenches on that, making that Chevrolet as fast as it was. And honestly, Zach, what were your thoughts on that? I thought it was a really good way to kick off this Xfinity Series season.
I thought this race was great. A lot of action, a lot of young guns, a lot of veterans, like even Joe Nemechek, who we talked about, didn't make the truck race, you know, racing in that. I did love it. It was some great racing action. And even let's go to the top five, you know, Noah Gregson getting his first win ever, and even at a super speedway, because most of his only win in the NASCAR truck series came at Martinsville. That's the only win he had in the truck. So to go from a short track like that to Daytona, two different tracks, to get a win there, definitely something special. Like you said, Harrison Burton making his first super speedway start, especially at Daytona, very special, getting second. Timmy Hill, and that is something interesting we need to talk about real quick. Timmy Hill's car had an issue going through inspection. There was a paint issue that had to get fixed, and the painters made a mistake, and they put Bondo on the car. You can't do that with the Xfinity car bodies because they don't need that. They're a composite body that get repaired on their own. The crew chief was suspended for 6 races. The team then started off with -75 points taken away from them, and also $15,000 fine from the crew chief. But still coming out and finishing third for a very small team like that, that's huge. And then Brandon Jones getting a fourth, and Chase Briscoe getting fifth. And you had Justin Haley, who was worried, what's my car going to do, especially with my teammates having that, getting a sixth place finish, a really great finish for that young man. Brandon Brown in the 68. Swap numbers so we can run his favorite number and get the 7, a great finish for him. Ray Black Jr., no surprise to him, getting the 8th in the 07 car. Ryan Sieg and Alex Bell running out your top 10. I thought it was a great, you know, race, and we had a lot of different levels of experience in that race, but we saw a lot of the young guns still have it and still showing that they're a lot better than the veterans, it looks like.
Oh, yeah, no, that was what's really interesting about the Xfinity Series. Over the past few years, we've definitely seen a changing of the guard where we're seeing more and more each and every year these younger Xfinity Series stars claiming the spotlight, taking the wins, taking the headlines, and it's really healthy for the sport because the Xfinity Series for the longest time since its inception has always struggled from this identity crisis of just being NASCAR Cup Series Junior. You know, there's always been a heavy Cup Series presence from the very get-go, and it's really struggled to have, you know, an identity all of its own. Whereas the Truck Series has excelled in this dynamic. Very rarely do you see a Cup Series driver participating in the Truck Series level. You got a very nice mix of established veterans who primarily race trucks. They don't really seem to very intent on moving up the ranks, and they seem very planted in their Truck Series career. And then you got a bunch of no-name drivers trying to make their way, which has made that series take on an identity all its own. And the Xfinity Series really just hasn't had that. So more and more over the last few years, we're seeing, slowly but surely, we're seeing, you know, catchy taglines like names are made here or get to know my number and things like that. And just really good brand marketing by Xfinity from that point. NASCAR kind of reining in the Cup Series competition level on that point by still letting them compete. So you still get that little bit of a little sprinkling, little flavoring of Cup Series action here and there. But primarily making sure the focus is strictly on these Xfinity drivers. And we're seeing such great personalities come through the sport, kind of taking on that mantle, taking on that pressure of trying to put the sport on their backs. Drivers like Harrison Burton that are just really charming in interviews. Noah Gregson gives some of the best interviews.
Oh, my God.
With a lot of rumors of Clint Bowyer kind of nearing the end of his Cup Series career, maybe going towards retirement, there's no one in the garage area that's more heir apparent to being this next generation's Clint Bowyer than Noah Gregson. The kid is just fantastic in interviews. I got a chance to meet him this last year. For many of you who don't know, I do a side profession where I build Lego model race cars, and I was able to take him to the track and show him off to some different people. And Noah was kind enough; he was very enthusiastic and very appreciative of the job that I did. But also, I was gracious enough to take a picture of the car for my Instagram page. So that was just super, super gracious of his time and sold me on
what a great genuine personality is, and he just shines through every time he's on camera, just talking about his passion about being in the sport, passion about driving for Dale Jr.'s team. And I didn't really know this, but I found this out like through the Dale Jr. download, through his Victory Lane interviews. The Dale Earnhardt family has kind of adopted Noah almost. I found out he was really close with Junior's late mom, Brenda. Apparently, Brenda absolutely adored Noah, and he hung out at the Earnhardt family's house a lot, cracking up with Brenda, hanging out at the shop at Junior Motorsports with all the guys. So I didn't realize it, but he's kind of become family at this point. So I'm just so happy to see that that team is fired off well after all those questions surrounding them. He's a great kid. I'm hoping he has a great sophomore season. Really shows everyone, all the naysayers, what potential he has, and maybe race his way towards championship and become the next driver through the junior development program that gets to showcase what they can do and hoist an Xfinity Series title. Join names like William Byron, Chase Elliott, and Tyler Reddick, who have all captured a title for junior motorsports.
I did find it interesting because no celebration for winning the race. It wasn't like he did the burnouts, got the flag win. He partied hard on the front stretch. It's just hilarious. He doing the burnout, getting the flame, being like, yeah, you smell that, getting the flag, waving around, putting in the wedge adjustment, then taking his water bottle and trying to chuck it into the fans, like, here, take this, you fans. And while that's happening, you have them interviewing Dale Earnhardt Jr. in Victory Lane. Dale's like, yeah, man, you know, this kid's got talent. And you see the side-by-side, the very calm and collective Dale Earnhardt Jr., and then Noah just flipping out. I won! It was, like you said, Noah is a funny guy. And if you ever just are bored, look up Kenny Wallace's Noah Gregson interview at Eldora. It is hilarious. And like, there's so many great, like, in not just interviews, but also clips of Noah just being the fun driver that we often want to see sometimes, you know. Another one that I think of is a Bristol race where he had the shark head on and he was crashing.
The shark head was iconic.
That was so funny. But like you said, this series now is coming to get its own legs. You know, the only Cup Series driver that was in that race technically was Timmy Hill and J.J. Yaley. But and BJ McLeod, but not like real, like threatening people like Kyle Busch or even William Byron or Chase Elliott. We didn't see that. We didn't see a lot of like heavy hitter drivers in this. And there was only a handful of drivers that were doing double duty for races, and one of them being Jesse Little doing the 4-car in Xfinity for JD Motorsports and the 97 truck for the Truck Series. And then you had Ross Chastain, who's the only driver this year to go at all three again, so for the Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup. Then you had Brett Moffitt doing double duty, running the 23 truck and the 02 car. I mean, there's so many, like names you look on here, and it's just like you see them, and you're like, okay, these guys are making their own names, and it's taking time, but they're still doing it. I think my favorite one on there that you know, is kind of underrated is Timmy Hill. Timmy's been around the sport a very long time, and he keeps making his name in this Xfinity series. If you look back at last year, I think it was the Bristol Night Race, he got the best finish for the 61 team, and it wasn't even the 61 team that Austin Hill was running. It was their number and some of their equipment. Not all of it, some of their equipment. And he got a top 10 finish at Bristol. The only time we've seen a driver like with not the best equipment do something like that was Matt DiBenedetto. Let's think about that. And now he is running for the Wood Brothers. I love this because the sports, and especially these smaller series, and when I say smaller, it's not by much, but they're smaller, definitely you can make your own name. We don't have a lot of those people, though, like you said, like from the Truck Series, where like Matt Kraft and Johnny Sauter, they've really just stayed, you know, kind of in that circle of staying in the Truck Series. Yes, Johnny Sauter has gone off and done Xfinity and even some Cup stuff, but not a whole lot compared to some of the other drivers. Even Matt Crafton has done very little. He's done a few Cup Series races, a few Xfinity races, and even a couple ARCA races. But again, his main focus has always been the Truck Series. And, you know, when you have three championships, you might as well just make it your own one. I will be interested to see if we'll see any drivers that stick with the Xfinity Series purely. that would be interesting to see. But I don't know. I did love the race. It was very entertaining. A lot of great strategy. A lot of hard work from some of those drivers too to move back up from the back of the pack after some pit stop strategy and some other stuff.
So kind of bridging off the drivers maybe establishing themselves as being an Xfinity Series only driver. One name we really can't kind of forget from that conversation, though, is Justin Allgaier. Allgaier's kind of done the Matt Crafton, Ron Hornaday almost approach, but to the Xfinity Series. Honestly, you know, he reminds me very much of Ron Hornaday's career. Hornaday started off, you know, in the Truck Series, worked his way into the Busch Series for a season, dabbled in some Cup Series starts in the early 2000s. But when Cup really didn't pan out, he went right back to the Truck Series where he found his initial success, where he really made a name for himself in NASCAR and went on to be one of the most legendary drivers the Truck Series has ever seen. And it's kind of in the same case with Justin Allgaier, just with the Xfinity Series. Allgaier really didn't run any truck events. He went straight from ARCA to the then Nationwide Series at the time. Ran really well for Penske, was a development driver for them. But there was just really no room for him in the development pipeline at Penske to move up to Cup. There was just no rides open for him. So which eventually led him to parting ways with the captain and landing another Nationwide deal with Turner Scott Motorsports, at the time just Turner Motorsports. He bounced around with that team for a while, but that eventually led him to his debut a couple seasons in the Cup Series. Unfortunately, the team he was with really wasn't to the caliber to really show the kind of talent that Justin Allgaier can bring to the track and bring to a team. And his Cup Series career was very short-lived, which landed him back now at his current home with Junior Motorsports in the Xfinity Series. And we've never really seen or heard any talks about bringing Justin Allgaier back up to the Cup level and giving him a second shot at Cup. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's not won an Xfinity Series championship to this point, even though he's been really close several times and had just several fantastic seasons throughout the year at both Penske, Turner, and even now at Junior Motorsports. But he just hasn't, you know, closed together the full package. But I feel like, you know, if he keeps on his current trajectory, he's got a great relationship with the Earnhardts, a fantastic relationship with Brandt Agricultural, his sponsor, that if he really wanted to, he could do the Matt Crafton and do the Johnny Sauter, Ron Hornaday Jr. approach. You know, he's carved a name for himself as being one of the mainstays in the series. He could very easily finish out the rest of his career in very competitive junior motorsports equipment, vying for titles. And I think the sport could really use that, could use an established star like Justin Allgaier, a good, you know, fan-friendly driver that doesn't make a whole lot of, you know, controversies on the track, is super great ambassador for the sport. He's a family man, you know, got two beautiful daughters, just great, you know, from that aspect. NASCAR always trying to, you know, get the family angle out there. So I really hope to see, you know, maybe Allgaier kind of take on that role. And as the Xfinity Series kind of establishes that names are made here, you know, their own kind of brand, their own kind of identification and standalone that makes it really stand apart from the Cup Series.
I do agree with you. Justin Allgaier, not just a great racer, great family man, and someone that has won the Great American Race a couple times, which we should get into. But first, I want to do the league points. So right now, there's only one person that guessed the right winner. So,
yeah.
Until
big tip of the cap to this guy.
Yeah. So we have five people in it, me, Brady, and John. And we also have one of our fans named Garrett, another fan named Todd, who entered in last minute. Both guys had great picks. So run down the picks first and go down points, and then we'll talk about the Daytona 500. So Todd picked the number 11 of Denny Hamlin. Garrett and John both picked Matt DiBenedetto, which was a good pick. Brady picked the number 12 of Ryan Newman. By the way, we had two Penske picks, huh?
Number 12 of Ryan Blaney.
What'd I say?
You said Newman.
Oh, crap. I got Newman on the brain. Hello, Newman.
You got to have Newman on the brain because he's you know, after everything he's gone through.
Yeah.
We love Ryan Newman. We do.
Yeah. And I had Matt Michael McDowell. Wow, I cannot speak after that one. I had Michael McDowell. So in the lead right now is Todd. He picked the winner. He got 40 points plus a bonus point for picking the winner. Garrett and John have 21 points because Matt DiBenedetto finished in the 19th position. Brady got 39 points because he picked second place, Ryan Newman. And I got 26
you
points.
You did it again.
In, what? Dang it, Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney finished in second. And I had Michael McDowell, who finished in the 14th spot. So not a huge gap between first and second, and then there's the rest of us.
So what you're saying is that Todd and I are just better than the rest of you. Todd, if you're listening
now,
tonight, shout out to you, good
Todd,
sir.
Todd,
we are just
Todd
better than the rest of these peons.
He's one of the co-hosts of Pop Culture Stars, and Todd is one of the best friends I've ever had. And, he's incredible. So we'll have him on here next week. And is that okay, guys?
That's
sounds
fine.
Good to me. I got a chance to meet him last week, and he's a cool guy to have around. So I'll be glad to have him on.
Todd is about as cool as they get. He really is. So now what position am I in?
So in first place is Todd with 41 points. Brady with 39 points. Todd with 41 points, Brady with 39, me with 26, and Garrett and John finishing out with 21 points. So it is still early. Like I said, the Fantasy League will go until the end of the regular season at Daytona. Then we will kick it off our second season for the final 10 races. The big rule for this one, though, boys, is once you pick a driver, you have picked them at an hour before the green flag of the race. And also, you cannot re-pick a driver unless he has won. So, Todd, you still get Denny Hamlin for another race. You can pick him for any race you want. But the rest of us lose out on our picks. Garrett and John, you lose out on Matt DiBenedetto. Brady, you lose out on Ryan Blaney, which with 39 points, that's not too bad. And I lose out on Mike McDowell. So, with that, we must get to the big show, the Daytona 500, the two-day show. Mother Nature tried to stop us, but I'll tell you what, she didn't win. We got that race in. It might have taken 2 days and a lot of jet dryers, but I'll tell you what, we ran it.
You know what's really
kind of
funny?
Both the Daytona 50 and the Daytona 450 there for a little bit.
Hey, that actually mapped that up, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what it mapped out to be.
Well, you know, it was really funny because I called up Zach this morning, and I said, you know what, it's going to be a D. And he gave me two choices. He said, it's going to be Matt DiBenedetto or Denny Hamlin. So all I got to say is, I think it'd be all right.
Well, like I said, John, you did get that. You were pretty close, but I do have to say, what a race! First off, 2 day event. And one thing I got to say too is because a lot of people were saying bad things about this. President Donald J. Trump is the grand marshal. There's a lot of people that didn't like it, that did like it. I'm not saying my point about this is what I want to say. It is very cool and a very great honor to even have the President of the United States be the Grand Marshal, a man that, you know, runs the country, makes the time to come down to the Great American Race. There's been a bunch of presidents that have done that, but, you know, we've had Ronald Reagan come when Richard Petty won his 200th race. We had both the Bushes come down and Bill Clinton. It was very cool to see President come down and be the Grand Marshal and say, gentlemen, start your engines right there on the grass. It was a really cool honor to have the President. I know there's some people that didn't like it. I thought it was very cool, whether you're a fan of him or not, to see that. But that kind of kicks off the race because you had a rain delay right as that happened, right after President Trump said that. He talked to the drivers. He said, gentlemen, have a great day. Stay safe out there. Go racing. One lap before we were supposed to take the green flag, it started to rain in on the back stretch. I'm like, really? We can't go one day without rain. You know, all weekend we only had two races that were affected by it. The first Daytona Duel and the truck race. They were affected a little bit. All right, and then we got Mother Nature being mean. The first, but we got the cleared up. We got the track dry. We went racing, boys. We got 20 nice laps in and then started to rain. Then the track drivers went out, and then they started replaying the 2019 Daytona 500 where Denny Hamlin won that as well last year. And what happened next? Oh, we're about to, drivers are sent to their cars. Oh, boy, what's going to happen next? And then a hurricane all of a sudden hits Florida. I'm like, what? How does this? Why? We just want to race, guys. Come on, Mom. And then the next day we found out later, 4 o'clock will be the new start time for the Daytona 500 or the Daytona 450, as Brady said. And it happened. We raced all day. We got through the first stage. We got through the second stage. We got to the win. The first victim, though, of racing at Daytona was William Byron, the young man who won his dual race, coming down 2 laps to go with the to the end of the stage. I'm sorry, 7 laps. They changed the format from to 65, 65, and 70. Going down the backstretch, heading towards turn 3, he gets spun out, hits head first into the wall. Very scary moment, but he got out under his own power. That was the first of many, many more incidents to come in this late afternoon of racing. Brady, do you think that was a turning point to, like, boys have at it?
Honestly, I really thought the whole event was kind of almost boys have at it. We didn't really see a dull moment in that event. And just like the Xfinity race, we also saw some pretty kind of crazy, you don't typically see kind of things happen. Most notably, at least to me, in those early stages of the race, there was an issue where the fuel can on Chase Elliott's car didn't properly disconnect when he was leaving pit road, and he accidentally swung it out onto pit lane right in front of Martin Truex Jr., who just essentially smacked right into it and drug it right out on track. And to be completely honest, I'm still baffled to this day that there wasn't more damage done to the number 19 Bass Pro Shops Toyota, because they're just – he hit that can with so much force, had to hit it about 60 miles an hour at very least. And surprisingly, no damage to that Toyota, so he kept on going. We saw plenty of, as to be expected, plenty of big wrecks. We saw one that put Joey Logano back into some negative press after the clash. He came under some heat from fellow drivers, including his teammate, Brad Keselowski, about his aggressive natures, about his aggressive blockings, his aggressive pushings, but most notably the blocking that led to him triggering the crash in the clash that took him and Brad Keselowski out of that event. Well, during Monday's race, he gave a hellacious push to the back end of Eric Almirola, sent him straight into the back of Brad Keselowski on the straightaway, and it was such a shot that even though they were driving the straight line, it completely turned the number 2 of Brad Keselowski completely around in front of the entire field, because they were right there at the front of the pack, and that just swallowed about a good dozen cars right there, taking out a bunch of big names, drivers like Jimmy Johnson, who was chasing that final Daytona 500 trophy in his final 500 race in his final full season, but got swept up in that. Matt DiBenedetto got taken out in that crash. Some damage was done to Martin Truex Jr. Just the names, some big, big names got swept up in that wreck. Right before that wreck was triggered, Kyle Busch, who was going for his first 500 win in his 15th start, he had a very stout Camry, was one of the favorites, had just an unbelievably strong car. But right before that big crash happened, the engine let go. He just lost a couple cylinders, and then it just completely let go on him. So unfortunately, an engine took him out right about that same time. Later in the event, we saw Ross Chastain with a pretty beat-up race car try and make a pretty Hail Mary move to the inside lane, going below the yellow line, running out of room, taking out half the track. I mean, in that wreck, he took out Christopher Bell, took out Ryan Preece, who was running really good at the time, took out Logano, and Tyler Reddick, who was also running good at the time, which now would actually be a pretty good time before we get to the final lap, the final restart there. How about our rookie drivers?
Before we get to that, there's one thing I want to say. Ross Chastain tried to do the video game move, And I give him credit. He tried. And we've seen it a couple times. A few people try it. Last year, Noah Gregson Noah Gregson tried to at Iowa in the Truck Series to get the win. Didn't pan out, just pancaked it on the wall. Another guy that tried to do that, Kyle Edwards, trying to take a win from Jimmy Johnson. I believe it was at Kansas or something. I remember it was in the Midwest. And I'll tell you what, they're called video game wins for a reason, because 99% of the time they don't work. Trust me, I know. I play enough of these video games that I know how they work. But like you said, at this rate, though, you have to do stuff like that. You definitely have to try and get that. Okay, I have this gap. I'm going to take it. And you know, and I'll say this, too. It's not like Ross was doing anything wrong per se. What it really was is that he was flying. I mean, I don't know where he came with all this speed, but he was flying. And I think it was the 37 that he was passing when that happened?
Yeah, and then they just ran out of room.
Yeah, I mean, Ross was legitimately like 10 to 15 miles per hour faster than Ryan Preece. And just Ryan didn't give him enough room, or Chastain shot the gap a little too soon, and just tried to play the video game. He tried playing NASCAR Heat, and he couldn't make it stick. But that's the desperation that these drivers have to win this Great American Race. You have to give it all you have to win it. And we've seen people try these moves at non-big races like the Daytona 500, and they still don't work. Now, Martinsville, you might be able to ride the rim a few times, but it won't work out too much. But like you said, a lot of these drivers, and one driver I was surprised about, like you said, was Kyle Busch. It was surprising to see, because at first glance, when Kyle was falling back, people thought that he might have had a tire being let go, because Joey Logano, I believe it was Joey, bumped him a little too hard, and people thought, oh, he pushed in the bumper and pushed in the quarter panels. But then you hear, oh, it's letting go, and it's like, no. Like, even I felt bad. You know, Kyle Busch is one of those drivers you either love him, hate him. I respect him, and I felt that's not the way you want a driver to lose out on the Great American Race. You know,
boy,
one thing
you better not mess. You better not mess with Kyle Busch. This is Dr. John. You better not mess with Kyle Busch. Okay.
But I will say this, that is like the one way you don't want to lose that race, is an engine let go. It's one thing, and it's like, oh, I blew an engine at Martinsville. That's fine. We'll come back here again. But the Daytona 500 is so iconic. I feel bad for him because of that. And that big wreck that took out so many great cars and took out some, you know, the young guys that were making a good name for himself. Like you said, Christopher Bell, who by the way, he still finished on the lead a few laps back, finishing 21st in his first Daytona 500, and even the pole sitter, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., making his first start in the 47 car, and Matthew Benedetto making his first start for the 21 car, being 19th and 20th. Still decent runs for those guys. Even the Iowa boy, Joey Gase, he had it running at the end. He did have a few mechanical issues, but he went back out on track and still finished 23rd. In the Rick Ware 51. But then you had Eric Jones and Brendan Poole in that wreck and issue. Brendan Poole finished on the lead lap. I'm sorry, but that is just desperate. That just shows the desperation of this race. You feel bad for the guy that everyone hates because he's arrogant, and then you feel bad for him because his engine like goes, and then you have Ross Chastain going for the desperatic Hail Mary shot to win.
And I just also want to take a moment and talk about our rookies there. We talked a little bit about Christopher Bell, but Tyler Reddick and Cole Custer also had very stout runs before, unfortunately, all three of them got swept up in some of the various wrecks that took place throughout the day. But, you know, we all knew that they were going to be up to speed. They were going to be running good because they were the big three last year. We know they have the talent, but neither one of them had really had a lot of cup experience. We talked a little bit in a couple shows about how they only have 5 cup starts between the three of them. So we just didn't know how big that learning curve was going to be for these drivers, especially coming to Daytona in the Cup Series, because those cup cars race so much different than what the Xfinity cars that they're used to driving race. And so we didn't know how they were going to run, and they raced phenomenally. They were patient. You know, they didn't put themselves in precarious situations.
They drafted well. They worked well with the veterans, and I think they made a very, very good showing of themselves. It's unfortunate the scoring results aren't going to reflect the actual effort that was there. Unfortunately, we got 21st for Christopher Bell, 28th for Tyler Reddick, and then a 37th for Cole Custer. But those finishes aren't indicative of the race that they put on for those new teams. And so I think that's very encouraging. Definitely got to be a confidence booster for those guys and hopefully get their season started off on the right start. But so that was kind of getting into the waning laps. That's what we kind of saw really set the stage as we went into our first overtime attempt. And it didn't take too long into that first overtime attempt before we had to stack them back up and try it again. Clint Bowyer going for his 15th attempt at the Daytona 500 as well. Unfortunately, through an accordion effect, got hooked in the right rear and spun through the infield grass and became a lawnmower there for a second. I still can't get used to the fact it's been since 2007 since we've had cars with splitters, and 13 years later, I still haven't gotten used to the fact that how as soon as they make contact with a grassy surface, they become just straight up bad boy mowers. They just eat the earth, and he just took out a nice hefty section of the infield grass. So that set up another caution flag, and we got stacked up for another restart, this being the final restart of the event. And what a restart. We were down to maybe only 10 or so competitive cars, and it didn't matter. Those 10 competitive cars put on one heck of a finish.
Oh, yeah. So to put in perspective, that finished on the lead lap, Chase Elliott, 17th, lap 209. He is the last car that crossed the start-finish line for the end result. And there were still some great cars, and there were still some on that finish, there were some cars that we didn't even think could make it this far. You know, Denny Hamlin winning, of course, Ryan Blaney getting second. By the way, him winning his first Super Speedway race, just the last time we went there. Chris Buescher, who's coming back to Jack Roush Racing, but this time in the Cup car, in his first start with the team, getting a third. David Ragan on his quote-unquote last start in the Daytona 500, getting a very respectable fourth, and I'm starting to wish I took him instead. Kevin Harvick getting a really great finish in the number four car, getting fifth. Clint Bowyer still rebounded from that incident with Michael McDowell going through the dirt and getting a sixth-place finish. Brendan Gaughan, who said he was retiring after all the Super Speedway races this year, getting a seventh, which is crazy. Corey LaJoie finishing eighth, and Ryan Newman still getting a top ten after what had happened to him. Kyle Larson getting a really good run, a 10th place finish. John Hunter Nemechek, the best rookie of the field, getting 11th in his first Super Speedway start. Austin Dillon finishing 12th. Justin Haley getting another start in the Super Speedway, this time in the 500. Not getting the win, but still getting a respectable 13th finish. Michael McDowell, my guy, finishing 14th. Bubba Wallace getting a great 15th place run after all the damage and all the carnage that happened. Brendan Poole bringing home the number 15 in the top 16. And then Chase Elliott. I mean, that's a fluctuation of a lot of experience and not a lot of experience and a lot of great racing and a lot of great calls. I love the Daytona 4 that you can have some of those just in the top 10 alone, have two, three underfunded teams going for a possible win. And then you have people who are making their final Daytona 500 start in the top 10. I mean, that's some great racing action, and it just shows what kind of race talent there is there, and also what kind of racing we can see.
And that's what really led into being a fantastic finish that we saw. I mean, putting aside the Newman wreck, you know, and everything that went along with that, what led up to the race to the finish was just some of the most incredible racing that I've ever seen. Coming into the final lap, things already got started off on a tense note when towards the back of the pack, Chase Elliott's car got hooked and went for a spin. A lot of us were wondering if that was going to bring out the caution and end that race right then and there as the cars were entering into turn two. But it was just a single, maybe one or two car spin. They quickly, you know, spun off the track. There was no debris laid down, so NASCAR kept the green flag out, and we finished that lap. And so coming off of turn two, Ryan Blaney was the real key factor in what set up that fantastic finish.
coming off of turn two, he gave Ryan Newman a heck of a push. He was absolutely glued to the back bumper of that stick. And that those two working in tandem were able to come up on the then leader, Denny Hamlin, who was leading the pack off of two, and they just swallowed him up. But when they got to the back bumper of the 11 car, that broke up the tandem that, you know, got Ryan Blaney dislodged from the back bumper of the six and just essentially just shot Newman straight past the 11 into the lead as they're racing down the super stretch. While with Denny Hamlin losing the lead and his momentum, he, you know, quickly fades in into line right behind Ryan Blaney in third. And Blaney, I don't know if a lot of people picked up on this, but Blaney did one of the most masterful jobs I've ever seen on plate racing. Of as soon as Hamlin tucked into line, Blaney, you could see just very ever so slightly drag that brake just a little bit, back that number 12 car right to the back bumper of the number 11 as they sailed off to turn three. And because, oh, normally at this point, Newman's got it. Newman pulled off the win. You know, he did the winning move. He broke off that momentum. There's no way they're going to be able to get gathered up in time. They just can't, you know, recover into two corners. But with NASCAR's new aero package and just how well those cars draft, how well they suck up to one another, it didn't take long for Hamlin and Blaney to link up throughout the arc of turn three heading into turn four, and they got just one hell of a run off of turn four. And coming off of turn four, Blaney about got spun off the nose of Denny Hamlin's number 11. So the fact that Blaney was able to even come across the line still baffles my mind, because every time I see them coming off of turn four, racing towards the start-finish line, setting up that race to the checkers, I still am expecting that number 12 car to just completely slide through the grass, because as sideways as he got off of Denny Hamlin, I can't believe he held onto that car. When he gathered it back up, he was to the inside of Newman, and that's when he unfortunately hooked the rear end of Newman's car and sent him spinning into the wall. And after Newman and Blaney made contact, that slowed the momentum just enough of the 12 to give Hamlin the run to the outside lane and beat Ryan Blaney to the finish line in the second closest Daytona 500 finish we've seen in history. And if you're wondering out there, well, who's the winner of the first closest Daytona 500? Well, it was none other than Denny Hamlin back in 2016, yeah, winning his first 500 win. So just a insane finish there at the end. Just close racing. And it's everything you want in a Daytona 500 finish. Unfortunately, we do have, you know, the hard news with Ryan Newman. But Zach, we can't understate or undersell just the thrilling nature of that run and just how well this aero package works to give these drivers some options to, you know, once they get past, quickly gather it back up and not just be a lost sitting duck there.
Oh, no, and that's the thing. Like you know, I will say it like this. I have a friend of mine who works at XM. He asked me to call in and talk about the race real quick because people kept bringing up Newman. And, yes, it is a very serious situation, but this was a great race. We can't forget that. We can't forget that there are a lot of these guys, including Newman himself, was racing hard, and it was spectacular. The last 10 laps, especially that last lap, they took the white flag and the lead changed about four different times. It's like, how? You know, I love the fact that Daytona is unpredictable in the sense of you can go in leading, going into turn one. You can leave back and you can leave turn one and two back and forth, get up to second in the turn four, and then somehow end up winning the race coming out of turn four. It's an unpredictable, that airflow, and it's that thing of like, I hope the guy behind me likes me enough to push me because I want to win this race, and I don't want him to just go right outside and pass me. I loved the race. It was spectacular. Especially those those last couple laps, like I said, I think this is one of the best, you know, minus Newman's incident, one of the better finishes to the Daytona 500 that I've seen in a long time. And I know people are saying, well, what about Denny Hamlin in 2016? That was spectacular. And like I said, that's kind of like the same circumstance. You know, we had somebody leading coming to the white flag. They fell back to third or fourth, moved back up. I believe it was Matt Kenseth was up there trying to get the win, and Denny Hamlin bumped him, and then was side by side with Martin Truex Jr., and then he won his first Daytona 500 that way. I love the fact that we got that close race. I love the fact that we had, you know, a lot of beating and banging, kind of like the truck race with Jordan Anderson and Grant Enfinger. They beat each other door to door, and again, it was a super close race. That's the one thing about this weekend is we had quite a few close races at the end, and I loved it. It was great. It kept me on the edge of my seat, even though I was standing up at it. I was working. I was working my valet job, and I was watching the race. I had to tell people, hold on 1 second, we're doing pit stops. I'm glad that, you know, this race is still historic, and it still has that oomph. You say the Daytona 500, people just go, man, they go, oh, yeah. And this race this year, this kick off the 2020 NASCAR Cup Series season, definitely gives me hope that it's going to be not just a great year, but a great year for racing, a great year for new drivers and development, and a great opportunity for this sport to expand.
I'm sorry. Dr. John, this morning at 6 a.m., I picked the wrong D. But that's okay. Correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. You always get them next week. That's what racing's always about. There's always next week. But, yeah, that's the one thing I really hope we...
The first thing that Zach said was... I just picked Matt Benedetto because I knew a D was going to win it. And so anyway, thank you for everything. And, but it was a D. It was Denny Hamlin. And
you know, we gotta really talk about Dennis Hamlin because it's kind of a shame that his win's being a little bit overshadowed, which rightfully so, it is a very serious situation, but it's a very historic win for Denny Hamlin. He becomes the first driver since Sterling Marlin back in 1995 to win a back-to-back races in the Daytona 500. He becomes one of only a handful of drivers to win three races in the Daytona 500. And one of only four drivers to win back-to-back races.
He fucking won it. And I'm sorry for that. He fucking won Daytona 500. And it's like, you know, nobody does that.
Well, not a lot of people, but Brady, you're right. I mean, the history that comes behind, especially winning three of them. And like you said, not many people. There's a lot of drivers that have never even won that race. And yet, Denny Hamlin's done it three times. We have Jeff Gordon, who's won it two times. We have Jimmy Johnson, who's won it three times. He's one of the few people that's done that.
Jeff Gordon's won it three times. Jimmy Johnson's won it twice.
That's right. I had it backwards. But then you put the legends next to him. You have, you know, Richard Petty, who's won the Daytona 500 multiple times. And you have,
seven
like
times.
You said, Sterling seven times. Yeah, I mean, that's the history that's going to go, because he's not just now the Daytona 500 champion. He's now three-time Daytona 500 champion. Not one time, not two times, three times. That is history. That's what makes you a legend in racing. There's not many people that have been able to win the Daytona 500. Only at max 62 drivers, and it's not even that. But the fact that he's won it three times in this modern era, in 4 years also, I may add, makes him legendary. And it's not like he's just a great Daytona racer either. He's a great plate racer, but he's also a great racer across the board in a lot of different tracks. He's great at short tracks, intermediate tracks. He has his bumps in the road, but who doesn't, especially when it comes to racing all these different tracks? Denny, I feel, might be a good contender for the championship this year, and this is a great way to kick it off, is with the win of the Daytona 500.
And that's how he kicked off.
Yeah,
he's
right now number one. And you know what? I think Denny Hamlin is incredible.
Right. And what were you saying, Brady?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that. He's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. So one thing, because I feel we've covered the 500, is next week is Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Again, we're having a triple header. We're having the Truck Series on Friday, the Xfinity Series on Saturday, and the Cup Series racing on Sunday. It is an exciting race, and fun fact, that is actually the first track I ever went to saw a NASCAR Cup Series race was Las Vegas. I was 10 years old, and I have family out in Vegas. The Pendle 400 presented by Jiffy Lube will be the race. And one thing looking forward to this is a new schedule change. And one thing we do need to add to that is that these teams don't have a lot of prep ready because, they have to now figure out how they're going to get the haulers back in time and send them right back out. And some teams don't have their Vegas cars ready because most of their teams have been down in Florida for the 500. So I'm looking forward to this. It's an interesting race weekend. The three big series all at one track again, and a lot of race action to come from that. I think, Brady, if you were a betting man, because it is Vegas, who would you pick to be kind of an underdog to come up and not win that race, but to be a contender for that race?
I think contenders in this race are going to be some of the drivers you typically see up the front. In the last 2 years, there's been two teams that have kind of put their names above the rest, and that's going to be Joe Gibbs Racing and Team Penske. Honestly, I feel like between those two stables, that is where your winner is going to come. Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano, they get around this track extremely well. Martin Truex Jr., we saw it when he was running for Furniture Row Racing, that he had an knack for this track, and so he's bringing all that knowledge, that know-how to the very fast Joe Gibbs Toyotas, which have a fantastic mile-and-a-half program. And then Ryan Blaney, he gets the benefit of, leaning on the notes of Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano, and just those fast Team Penske Fords, that Ryan Blaney, I feel like, is a driver you have to keep an eye on. But then you have names like Kevin Harvick, who's going to be probably in the factor towards the end of it. He's a multiple-time winner at Las Vegas. Jimmy Johnson himself, a multiple-time winner at Vegas, looking to get his season started off on the right way, chasing down that next championship and hoping to go off on a final note. So those are some names I definitely keep an eye on. There's some drivers towards the mid-pack that you can probably get a good budget by if you're into fantasy drafting or if you're looking at maybe just some good reliable picks. But if you're looking to take that win and take all the money, I say you got to look at the Team Penske or the Joe Gibbs Racing camp.
I'm definitely there with you. I feel, though, that we might see Team Chevy finally have a breakout at Vegas. They've been decent the past few years. They haven't had the wins, obviously. But I feel like Chevy, their intermediate speedway cars have gotten a lot better. It is going to be interesting to see, though, because this will be the first time that they're coming to Vegas right after the Daytona 500 and see what all they're going to have ready for that. Like you said, I feel strong about Jimmy Johnson because he's a former winner there, multi-time winner there. I was actually there one time when he won it. The only other driver I've seen win there is Casey Kane, actually. I do love this track because it is my first track I've been to. It's not my favorite track, as Brady will note. But who would be a strong race finisher for that? I feel like Jimmy Johnson's going to try his hardest because that's one of the earliest tracks he's won at. But I feel Alex Bowman with his great show at Chicagoland, and Chicagoland and Vegas have a similar layout as they are a cookie cutter track, but they kind of have similar banking. Chicagoland's a little more steeper, but I feel like he's going to be a little more excelled in that, and he's going to be want to get win number two really bad after the finish he had at the Daytona 500. And especially, I feel he's going to have a lot of luck on his side in Las Vegas because Lady Luck lived there.
Well, and we even see, if you're looking in that camp, you can't discount Chase Elliott because the last two Las Vegas races, since they introduced the Camaro body style, Chase has been by far and large the leader in speed from the Chevrolet camp when we got to Vegas in early March. And, due to some unfortunate circumstances and a couple of wrecks, he doesn't have the finishes to show for it. But I feel like if he gets some of that Lady Luck to go his way and maybe get some 777s going, he might be a driver who will get his 2020 campaign kicked off with a win here and maybe excite that ever-growing Chase Elliott fan base.
I do love it because you ask people now who their favorite driver is. You go back 5-6 years ago, for me, it was always going to be Jeff Gordon. It was Jeff Gordon. And you got a lot of people saying, who's your favorite driver now? It's like, I like that Chase Elliott kid. He's got some talent. And then, I do feel that. I do feel like he had it. And that's one thing that we have to look at, too, with some of these people is Lady Luck sometimes doesn't always give him a 777. Sometimes it's a 7, a bar, and an apple for some reason, and they just wreck out earlier. They get caught up in someone else's wreck. But it is always something we have to look forward to, especially this. It is the start of the West Coast swing for a lot of you who don't know. The next three races happen on the West Coast. It is Vegas, Phoenix, and then Auto Club Speedway. And a lot of teams actually stay out there. They have makeshift shops that they work out of. And some teams even just work in parking lots. When I was working for BJ McLeod, I seen them and talked to them. They were working in a parking lot of the hotel they were staying at because that's what they had to do. And it's a lot of fun, and it's interesting, but it sucks because it gets nice and hot out there in Vegas, except for this time of year. They actually got snow about this time of year last year, so let's hope they don't get it this year. That would be one of the weirdest weather happenings to happen for a NASCAR race in Vegas.
Maybe it's definitely something you wouldn't expect to see in the middle of the Nevada desert, but it's definitely going to pose a challenge to the teams having the West Coast swing this early in the season, especially given the fact that they're losing a day of travel with having the Daytona 100 move to a Monday race. So it was a very, very quick turnaround for those teams back in the Charlotte area trying to get those haulers out west. But I feel like we're going to have to wait and see if that maybe plays a factor into any of their previous preparations to see if there's any, teams lagging behind, maybe any teams that are a little unprepared, maybe a little scattered when we get to the garages open on Thursday and Friday. But I like that they do all the West Coast races early in the season and all at once because, the rest of the country, we're all kind of thawing at this point. We're still trying to find, grass growing underneath all this mounds of snow. So it's a nice way to make sure the temperature climates are going to be a little more favorable. Like you said, we still never know. You might still get a stray snow shower in February at Las Vegas. So, but it's going to be hard on these teams. It's a lot of weeks to be away from the home base. And, you can't run really similar cars at these tracks. You've got to continually swap out the car. So a lot of miles are going to be logged over these next few weeks, and the teams are going to be glad to have it all, kind of rip that Band-Aid off early, just get the West Coast swing done and over with, and then, kind of collect their bearings, get those first four races in the books, and then say, okay, are we in a bit of a panic mode, or is our 2020 going okay?
So one thing I do want to say, so a lot of these bigger teams will have spare haulers that will take cars back and forth from these West Coast races. They'll have their primary cars basically ready, loaded up, and they'll swap equipment. They might have to do some work in the makeshift garage, like I said. One team to follow on Snapchat for something good, like to see what that happens, is Joe Gibbs Racing. They actually do a very good job of showing what they do during this West Coast swing. But there's one thing I want to say, there's a lot of small teams who have to actually, they don't have that opportunity or that option or even the availability to have a hauler drive back to Charlotte, North Carolina, and back to the track or back to the West Coast. So they often have to bring only two cars to run the whole West Coast swing. And if one gets wrecked, they really have to break that primary car out. It might hurt them because oftentimes that primary car is never as good as their first car. Teams like BJ McLeod, Johnny Davis Motorsports, even Premium Motorsports in the Cup Series will have to bring backup cars or just a few cars to the racetrack and hope that they don't wreck out. And if they do, they have to try to fix them there in the local area. Maybe it's Vegas, it might be Phoenix, it might be Los Angeles, California. We don't know. But with that, that is the recap of the Daytona International Speed Week. I love the racing action. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of great action. Still our thoughts and prayers with Ryan Newman. We look forward to Las Vegas Motor Speedway for all three sections of NASCAR. The top three, the Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup, will be racing, and they will be racing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Fellas, anything else?
All I got to say is thank you to everyone. We had a wonderful week of the Charlotte line, And so we got to go because we're going to, like, get cut off by the British lady. But so thank you so much. Okay?
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. You guys were great.